PCW News Time is 8:16. Well, last Friday morning at the Homestead Resort, the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce held a meeting. There were about 60, 70 business owners there. They listened to an international travel and tourism consultant tell them what he discovered in their valley. Some good things, some bad things. He took them to task for some poor signage. He said they have great activities, but they don't have the après activities to support any sort of shopping or dining after you're done snowmobiling or fly fishing or hiking or river rafting in the area. Joining me on the phone right now is the executive director of the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce, Ryan Starks. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning, Renee. How are you?
Good. So did I give an accurate assessment? It was a really long presentation, but a good one. What did you think of it?
I think it was great. We've anticipated his presentation for a number of months and quite frankly wanted a lot of our community leaders to be there to hear what he had to say. We had penciled in about two and a half hours, and his presentation went 3 hours. So he certainly had a lot of findings, and we're really pleased with what he had to share with us.
What kind of feedback did you get from the business owners in the audience?
Well, I think there was a tangible buzz, starting with the mayor of Midway all the way down to city council members. Our county manager was there. He was excited about what he heard. And then a lot of our businesses said, you know, now's the time for us to really step up. And we're kind of going through the growing pains of becoming a little larger community where we've been such a small town for so long. And so people realized that what Roger had to share with us is very accurate. And a lot of the business leaders said, you know, now it's time to start doing and putting in place some of the recommendations that he shared with us.
And Roger is Roger Brooks, the consultant who gave the presentation. And he and his wife came to the area, what, about a week or 2 weeks ago, and secret shopped a lot of businesses. And it was really interesting to hear that specific feedback to those businesses. And one in particular was the first one he tackled was Soldier Hollow, not really a business, a not-for-profit organization, but he took them to task for several things. Tell us about that.
Well, it was funny because a lot of the business owners or managers from the different areas within the Heber Valley were in the audience. And so he would give them a hard time, and everybody knew their turn was coming. So it was fun. And Soldier Hollow specifically, he talked about wanting to go tubing and how it's on the website and how it says it's Soldier Hollow. But when his wife and he got up to Soldier Hollow, they looked and they couldn't find signage. And they went to the clubhouse. They still couldn't find anything about tubing and drove around. And it's a large complex. They said, well, maybe we're in the wrong place. And so then he asked the audience, was I off base or is Soldier Hollow really is tubing really at Soldier Hollow? And everybody kind of laughed and chuckled and said, no, it's there. And he was just feet away from where they do the tubing, but it was blocked by a little berm and hill. And there was no signage to indicate otherwise.
And you could tell the audience was maybe a little frustrated. And I was sitting next to the Soldier Hollow people, and they said, gosh, you were right there. How did you miss the tubing hill? But I guess if you're there when tubing is not happening, you might not notice it's a tubing hill?
That's right. And I think with the winter right now and where, I mean, minus today with all the new snow that we have, where there's a lot of brown and the rain had melted a lot of snow, it wasn't obvious to them. I know that the park manager for Wasatch Mountain State Park said, no, there is a sign down about a mile down the road. And he said, well, I'm not going to look for that. If I show up somewhere, I'm going to look for a sign that will provide clear instructions.
He also made a good point about making sure you invite people back. And he did use the Soldier Hollow Golf Course as an example. He asked, is this a public golf course? And everyone answered, yes, it is. And he said, how do I know that? There's no sign indicating it's a public golf course. So that seems like a pretty simple thing someone can do to make sure people are aware of activities all year round.
That's right. And not only with Soldier Hollow, but so many other restaurants and businesses, a lot of issues with signage and making promises, but not fulfilling those promises. Another example of Soldier Hollow was the restaurant there at the Soldier Hollow Lodge. And he said, hey, does this place have a restaurant? And everybody nodded, yeah. I said, well, I didn't know that. There's nothing to indicate. Whereas other places would make promises and say things like, open tonight. from 6 to 10, and then he would go there, and it wouldn't be open. One example was Heber City allowed the Timpanogos Valley Theater to fly a flag in front of their city building, a banner, and the banner says, "Play tonight." And so when he went to look for the actual, you know, area where they do the play, couldn't find anything. And then when he finally did find it, it said, "Close, no play tonight." So a lot of promises that our businesses are making but not fulfilling.
Yeah, and he mentioned the zip line place out at Deer Creek and how there's a big sign on the highway that says, "Now open," and he follows the sign and he goes down the road and there's a closed gate. And he's like, "Clearly you're not open." And people kind of laughed at that as well and said, "Well, you know, it's open during the summer. You should know that." And his point was, no, people don't know that. And by the way, what is summer? Is it Memorial Day to Labor Day? That's not necessarily the case, because boomers like to travel before Memorial Day and after Labor Day. So he had some really good points also about businesses staying open. What kind of reaction did you get from businesses about that?
Well, it seemed like everybody in the audience was nodding in agreement with that concept. And he shared with us a statistic that 70% of retail shopping happens after 6 o'clock p.m. And so that was one of his tests, to where he would go specifically to Midway and go to these little boutiques and shops. And he found that very few, if any, were open after 6. And he said, "It's just very difficult for you to maintain a vibrant economy and to attract visitors when you're closed or when you're open at random times." And then one of our other businesses was supposed to be open, but when he went up there, there was a sign in the window that said, "Closed, we'll be back shortly." And so he joked with the audience, "But what does shortly mean? Did he put this up yesterday and he'll be back tomorrow? Or did he put it up 10 minutes ago and we'll be back in another half hour?" So it's just kind of the theme that we're seeing, that a lot of our businesses are closing and the signage and their communication is just not fulfilling what it needs to do.
He really took issue with Main Street in Heber. And he put up a picture of, as you drive into Heber Valley on 40 from Park City, and you see the beautiful open north fields. And he said he and his wife were just oohing and aahing at how gorgeous the area is. And then they hit Heber Main Street. And he said, "The first thing you've got to do is bury the power lines." And some people chuckled at that, because that's not an inexpensive proposition.
It's not. It's something I know that a lot of our Heber City leaders have discussed at length over the years. And it's a very expensive proposition. I know that the Heber City plan now calls for developers to bury the lines. So anytime they build a new building or renovate an existing building, it's up to the developer to bury that. And so slowly but surely over the years, we have started to bury a lot of the power lines. But I think he brings up a great point. When we talk about curb appeal, you come down from Park City on Highway 40 and it's stunning, the views, but your welcome mat is power lines and used cars that have been towed. There's a tow yard there and a lot of other things that just aren't very welcoming. So he gave us some good ideas of what we could do to kind of roll out the welcome mat and improve our appearance.
What were some of those ideas?
Well, a lot of it was just sweeping, getting rid of some of the dirt. He said that it would be nice if Heber City could implement a better flower system, to where they have these planters up and down Main Street, and to really consider doing some type of median where flowers and trees can grow, just to slow down the traffic and to improve, you know, the beauty of the area. He also talked a lot about benches, and this was kind of a funny takeaway. He said that a lot of people on Main Streets like to sit down, and as maybe a spouse goes into a shop to spend some money and to buy some things, that the other spouse will sit out on the bench and just kind of enjoy the scenery. So he took pictures and showed where our benches are. They're about 6 inches from the curb. And if you've been on Heber City's Main Street and with the traffic that we have and with some of the tankers that go up to Vernal, he joked, who would want to sit 6 inches from all that traffic? So his recommendations was to put the benches back to be near the facade of the building and flank benches with flower pots. And he showed study after study of other towns and cities that have done this, and the difference has been tremendous. It's been a lot more inviting and attracted more people, which has increased revenues for those businesses. So those are some of the things that he discussed.
And he gave kudos to, I believe it was Spin Cafe on Main Street, because he put up a picture of their exterior and he said, here's a business that gets it right. They put up their benches and chairs outside up against the facade, so you're not right up against that traffic. And they also had nice little pots with little pine trees in them. And he said, you know, you don't necessarily need it to be summertime to have good landscaping or good decoration in these flower pots. And he also raved about a few local businesses. He had encouraged you guys to put together a brochure with your 10 anchor tenants. And he said they couldn't be, like you couldn't put just Jordanelle Reservoir. You had to put saline at Jordanelle Reservoir. And I think he said, call it an activity, not an amenity. But then he mentioned some other businesses as well that he considered anchor tenants. What were some of those?
Well, he called this list the best of Heber Valley, kind of the places that we would recommend to friends and family. As visitors come in, we could give them a little guide saying, you know, you've got to check this out. So the Wasatch Mountain State Park Visitor Center was one of those. He just felt like there's so many things to see and learn about there that that's certainly an attraction. He also talked about one of our little stores called Wigglish. It's a unique toy store. It's actually just a storefront, probably 2,000 square foot building. They do a lot of online sales as well. But when you go in, these type of toys are just so unique to the area that he felt like that was an attraction. And then he talked about the Dairy King, which is home of the train, as they call it. And you've been there. It's a magical experience for the train, a miniature train that's live and going the whole time. He said that that's certainly a feature. And then the Heber Valley Railroad itself. He said, you know, this is a historic asset to the community. It's a place where people would want to come and bring their families and kind of experience the good old West. So those are some of the ones that made the list.
And he made a great point about the train, that he and his wife showed up looking for the train, and there's no train there earlier in the day. And he said, why not just keep the train out instead of back in the maintenance yard so people can see it and maybe tour it? But all of this takes resources, right? It takes employees and staying open longer. And are we at that tipping point in the Heber Valley where the economy can sustain that?
Well, it's a good question, and I think we're going to have a lot of great discussions around that same question. I think a lot of the recommendations are quick fixes, things like signs and things like improving the look and feel of your little section of town if you own a business, if you own a building, and I think we're going to start tackling that soon. He also talked about wayfinding signs, and we've set aside some funding and we're working with the city council to match that funding so that we can start to improve our signage from a city level. And then in terms of staying open later, that really it is up to each business. But I think the takeaway is that we've got to change our mentality, that we can't be open Wednesdays from noon to 2 and Fridays from 3 to 3:45. Instead, we have to have consistent hours. And so the Chamber of Commerce is going to go pitch this concept to a lot of our local businesses and ask them if they can opt in to some type of uniform schedule. And maybe that's a seasonal schedule, but hopefully we can grow it to the point where businesses can stay open longer year-round.
And you're up against a pretty sticky wicket here, aren't you? If businesses like being open Tuesday to Saturday, they don't like being open Sunday in the Heber Valley. Is that a hurdle that you think you have to get over in Heber, or do you think that you can maintain the local culture and traditions and say, we're not going to be open on Sunday?
Yeah, for now, I know that a lot of the businesses do want to remain closed on Sunday, and a lot of our visitors are coming Monday through Saturday. So I think that we'll continue that until maybe the market dictates otherwise.
Okay, Ryan, if people want to see this presentation, you guys are going to make it accessible to anybody who wants to see it. Is that right?
We are, and we recorded the whole thing. And we have a new newsroom website on our GoHeberValley.com website. And so if anybody wants to go there, it should be posted later this week. So the web address is GoHeberValley.com/newsroom. and there'll be the whole presentation, and then we're going to break it down to smaller clips as well, and very informative.
Great. Ryan Starks, Executive Director of the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce, thanks for your time this morning. Welcome back to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. I'm Renee Bodley, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. The time is 8:33. Well, every year, Summit County awards millions of dollars to local non-for-profit organizations through the Restaurant Tax Grant and the Cultural Wrap Tax. And I understand there's even more money to give away this year. Joining me this morning to talk about how to get it is Brooke Hauntz and Ben Castro. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Good morning.
So first, let's start with your involvement with your respective committees, how much money you're giving away and where it comes from. Brooke, we'll start with you. You're with the Restaurant Tax Grant Advisory Committee. Is that right?
That is correct. And we're pleased to announce this year we have quite a bit of money, $2.61 million.
Whoa, that's almost half a million more than last year. Is that right?
It is, yes. So that means that people have been eating out and eating prepared foods pretty significantly in the past year. Because our grant comes from a 1% tax that are charged on restaurant foods and prepared foods. And we are exist to advise the county council on how to provide that funding to the county in this granting process for tourism promotion and for financing of tourism activities.
Got it. And Ben, your committee is?
So we are the wrap portion, so recreation, arts, and parks, and it's broken out into cultural. So we receive our funding from 0.1% from the sales tax. And so that those funds go to cultural programs within Summit County and cultural organizations for different programming as well.
And how much money do you have this year?
So this year we have $827,000, which is up $54,000 from last year, which was $771,000.
Okay, so 2.6, 827. We're looking at almost $3.5 million you guys are going to be giving away.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's really exciting. So what's the criteria? What standards does an organization need to meet in order to apply for this money?
Sure. On March 1st, the grants both will open on the county website, and all of the information will be there. But for the restaurant tax grant, you need to be a not-for-profit or a government entity, and you need to be providing some sort of tourism promotion. So it can be in the form of marketing. It can also be more creative in terms of how you provide us information to show that you're promoting Summit County and Park City. Additionally, it could be for something like an asset, like your building or hosting an event at a facility that is enticing and engaging people from outside of Summit County to come to Summit County to visit.
Who were the biggest grant receivers last year?
I believe our top two were the United States Ski Team, so USSA and Sundance, and they typically are some of the top two or top five performers. But we hover right around 50 grantees per year. Last year, I came on pleading for more people to apply, and we had a couple more apply. But in the end, what happened was everyone just asked for more money. So I'm hoping that we have additional grantees apply this year, but that we also continue to be able to give out the amount of money that we bring in from the restaurant tax.
So if you're a nonprofit and somehow encourage tourism to the area, then you can apply.
Absolutely. And even if your organization exists to provide services to locals, if you're doing a particular event or you're providing a particular service that you plan on trying to engage with people from outside the county to come to Summit County, please apply for that type of event or activity.
Got it. And then, Ben, let's talk about your grant and who you give money to. And full disclosure, you give money to KPCW, don't you?
Yes, we do. So some of the bigger organizations that we gave funds to this last year was KPCW. We also gave funds to Sundance, the Egyptian, the Park City Institute as well. So our criteria is a lot different. We cannot use any of those funds for marketing money. So it has to be things like operations. It can't be for assets. So if an organization wants to buy a truck or a film projector. That was a request that someone had made a couple of years ago. We can't fund those type of things. So it's more of on the programming type side and more expenditures. So, for example, one of our organizations goes and gets buses for Eastern Summit County to go to the Park City Museum. And so, you know, we really try and develop on the cultural and historical side as well. But they have to be nonprofits as well.
So if you have $827,000 to give out, what's the largest amount you gave to one single entity last year? Do you know?
You know, off the top of my head, I believe it was about $80,000+ last year. So typically we have about 20 grantees that apply. And so with our criteria, I mean, we have anywhere from someone that is requesting $180,000 for a request all the way down to, say, $5,000, like the Echo Historical Museum. So that's one of the nice things is that we're basically trying to spread it around the entire county.
So how difficult, Brooke, is the application process?
Well, since I write it, it's hard for me to think that it's that hard. So sorry. But actually, we are trying to streamline it just a little bit more this year. It's only a few pages, and there are simple questions about how are you going to use the money, when are you going to use the money, and how does this support tourism, and how does it get people to come to the restaurants and refund, you know, put the money back into the tax again for the following year. So I feel like it's pretty reasonable asks to give out this money.
And the money has to be spent within the year, or can it be for a longer range project?
Ours actually can be used over an 18-month period. However, if there are some things that occur during that 18 months that require that you might need an extension, you can apply.
And how do you know the money is spent for what they said it would be spent on?
Well, both of our committees actually have a requirement to provide information on how you did spend the money. So it's a financial report. And that's something that every year we need to make sure that both committees receive at the county level. And so that we can check and make sure, not just for our own sake, for our peace of mind, that it's being spent appropriately, but also for the state. If we ever get audited, we want to prove that how we awarded the money was how it was spent.
Has there ever been an audit?
I've been on the committee 9 years, and as far as I know, there hasn't been, but the state has used our committee as a standard for the rest of the state to say this is how it should be done. So hopefully if we just keep asking the right questions and people continue to provide compliance, we're good to go.
Are you at all concerned that there may be some reallocation of this tax money, which may not be allowed under state statute, but if people are saying, for example, last Monday at our Project for Deeper Understanding, there was some concern about the percentage of the transient tax that goes to the chamber for recruiting new events. And Chris Robinson said, Summit County Councilman Chris Robinson said, maybe we need to look at that. Maybe we're just maxing out on events and tourism, and we need to scale back a little bit. Has any of that been whispered in your direction?
Not yet. And I can definitely understand that concern. But if you look at the wide variety of requests that we receive and how we're actually funded, I mean, we have given money to support plaques and belt buckles that are seen at rodeos around the West because we feel like that is a marketing advertisement for Summit County. Now, that's a much different type of marketing than, let's say, the Park City Institute or the Egyptian Theater does down in Salt Lake or on the radio. And so there are ways that we make sure that the funds are used appropriately, but they're also dispersed throughout the county and they get to different places that you might not expect the monies to go.
And Ben, this might be asking a parent who their favorite child is, but what's some of your favorite grants that you've given and what's been achieved with that money?
You know, I take a look at, for example, the Park City Film Series. I mean, for a while, when there was a venue in Camas, for example, they were actually filming library movies there. And so that is really trying to serve not just Western Summit County, which unfortunately a lot of the dollars do get spent over here, but opening it up to Eastern Summit County. We had, you know, Mountain Town Music that was putting on free concerts in Colville and at least attempting to try and engage everyone within the county in a wide range of cultural events.
So the flip side of that question, who has applied and has not been given a grant and why?
So, for example, it was 2 years ago we had the Park City Education Foundation. Well, they couldn't apply and actually receive grant money for under RAP Cultural because it does not allow for education to receive those kind of monies based off of the state statute. And so the last audit that we had on the RAP Cultural was in 2010, and it outlined that you had some counties that were actually giving RAP Cultural money to recreation, so water parks or swimming pools, just promoting it. So they were using the cultural money completely inappropriately.
Ah, got it. And Brooke, anybody that's applied for grants with your committee that you've had to turn down?
Unfortunately, yes. We've had a few people who weren't not-for-profits. Then we've also had people try to or ask to use the money for assets or for structures that weren't government entities or weren't related and weren't going to have them operated by a government organization. And so our grant doesn't necessarily want to and aren't allowed to give that money to support a private business venture or someone's, you know, deciding to build their structure for profit. And so we need to just make sure that whatever someone asks for does meet that portion of the statute.
So when you get the 40-some applications, 40 to 50-some applications
it's
in?
It's been hovering around 50.
50,
yes,
wow.
Quite a few.
When you get those in, and they start coming in March, and it closes March 31st, so you have the whole month of March.
That's correct.
And then you dole out the money June?
Yes, so we make our recommendations. Our interviews this year are going to be held May 1st and 2nd. I don't know about.
And with RAP Cultural, we're going to be doing it the second week of May. So we're trying to basically line up everything so we all come to the county at the beginning of June. So then they have the what we've decided as far as allocations, and then they can make their final decision from that.
So you guys advise council is the final vote on who gets what?
Correct. Correct.
And what are those meetings like? Do you do site visits? Do you do in-person interviews? How does it work?
I believe we have similar styles. We take the applications and then individually as committee members, we review them. Each committee member is also tasked with championing or being in charge, essentially, of a handful of those applications for follow-up questions. And then we do an interview where the applicant comes in and has an opportunity to describe exactly maybe things that we might not be able to glean that's in the material or additional insight just that they would like to provide about their organization. After that, we have deliberations privately, and then which are very lively and exciting because it's so fun to give away this much money. So
fun and probably gets pretty passionate. People vying for the dollars, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, with our organization, because we have so many less amount of applicants, we can actually go and do a site visit. That's what we ask each one of our members to go do so they can actually kind of get a better feel of, you know, who's applying for this. And then we come back and, you know, like the restaurant committee, we do basically what we call their 15-minute advertisement to the entire group. And then we come back and deliberate and review those.
Sounds like a thorough process. We need to leave it there. Thank you very much, Brooke Hauntz, Ben Castro, here talking about the Summit County Cultural and Restaurant Tax Grant. You can go to summitcounty.org starting March 1st and find those applications. APCW News Time coming up on 8:48. Well, a leading national news story this morning, the Trump administration has announced a sweeping rewrite of immigration enforcement policies. Any immigrant who's in the country illegally and is charged or convicted of any offense or even suspected of a crime will now be an enforcement priority. That's according to Homeland Security Department memo signed by Secretary John Kelly. The immigrant community in Park City is already on high alert after four people were arrested by enforcement removal officers last Friday. While immigration and local law enforcement tell us the arrests are not uncommon, the action stirred a lot of anxiety, and there were widespread reports of people afraid to show up for work or even go to school. I spoke to some immigration advocates about some steps immigrants can take if confronted by authorities. Both Park City's police chief and Summit County sheriff issued statements over the weekend assuring the community that the four arrests were not uncommon and not an indicator that the area is at risk for more sweeps or raids. Still, immigration advocates are reporting heightened concerns in the community. Shelley Weber has worked with immigrants in Summit County and Park City for more than 20 years. She echoes what local law enforcement is saying.
My suspicion is that they're continuing to do what they've already been doing, which is to pick up people that have outstanding warrant. And it's not that they're rounding up people.
Weber says ICE typically picks up people who didn't appear in court or who didn't appear for a scheduled deportation hearing. So the best thing to do is stay off law enforcement's radar.
I just really caution people to just stay away from any kind of breaking of the law. Don't even think about driving drunk. Don't even, you know, any of that stuff. Taillight, anything.
Kate Barber agrees. She's an attorney with Immigrant Legal Services. She said she received one call Friday from a family who heard rumors about immigration raids.
This particular family is actually in the middle of legalizing, and so their primary concern was, how do we make sure that if ICE does come knocking, we can continue with our process?
Barber says how an immigrant should respond to immigration officials depends on where they are when they are approached.
So ICE comes to the factory, hotel, construction site, office, or wherever it is that you're working. They're likely going to ask you your name, and any immigrant who's encountered has the right to remain silent. We actually hand out little cards that say, I do not want to talk to you. I am exercising my right to remain silent, and as soon as possible, I wish to speak with an attorney.
Barber says that doesn't mean they will leave you alone, but it does mean you can at least speak to someone before divulging any information that may be contrary to your best interests. If ICE agents come to the door, Barber says, don't answer it.
If you get a knock at the door and it's somebody that you don't know and their reason for being there doesn't seem like it checks out, you are not obligated to open the door to them, unless they have a warrant for somebody who lives in the home.
She says families should talk to their children about not answering a door to strangers unless a parent is around. Barber says there's another reason to doubt that any kind of large-scale sweeps will be happening soon. The logistics would be difficult for ICE right now because they don't have anywhere to keep anyone they may apprehend. Their contract to keep detainees at the Utah County Jail expired last December.
If they want to do one of these activities, then they need a place to put all the people that they pick up, which right now is Las Vegas. So it's a pretty Herculean task for immigration to go pick up a lot of people, because then they have to find space for them and then transport them down to Las Vegas.
So are we at that point where we need to worry about people being transported? I mean, all indications seem to be that we don't. And in order to separate fact from rumors in all of this, joining me this morning, we have Sally Elliott, longtime Park City community advocate. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Renee.
And Beth Armstrong with the People's Health Clinic. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning, Renee.
So let's start with what is happening Thursday night. You guys have organized a big community meeting.
Well, first, I want to say that Sally Elliott has organized a community meeting. Without Sally, none of this would happen.
I had an awful lot.
She had help, but...
And everybody I asked to help me with it stepped forward and said, oh, absolutely. My thought was, as I was reading all these emails on Friday from terrified people, that we need to come together as a community and have a conversation about this. There's so much that I don't know. There's so much that nobody knows. It's hard to separate fact from fiction. And we need to know what the problem is, how we can work with it. And we need to reassure our Latin community that we love them, that they are an integral part of our community, and that we're going to stand with them.
And things are changing. I mean, this came from the Department of Homeland Security just yesterday. So you're going to have some people there Thursday night who have their fingers on the pulse of this issue, who can talk about the very latest. Who do you have attending?
Well, let's see. John Mejia, who's the legal director at the American Civil Liberties Union Utah, will be there with us. I have been speaking to Michael Byrne, who's the enforcement and removal operations guy. He's the Fed. And he's a little dubious about coming, of course, because he's afraid he'll step into a firestorm. So I'm going to try to assure him that we're all going to be very, very polite and that we're all going to be very concerned with the issues and that we're all here to learn. We also have the Mexican consul is sending a representative. We're going to have the meeting translated in case someone needs to have a translator. Marty Jones, an attorney with Holy Cross Ministries, will be there. And then, of course, Justin Martinez and Wade Carpenter.
And will you open it up for questions? Will it be presentations? What will the format be like?
It'll be a panel discussion, and we will open it up for questions or just public statements, and we will be limiting those to 3 minutes.
And do you expect a large turnout?
We hope for a large turnout, especially from our Latino partners in the community and our neighbors. But I think we'll have a large turnout from of the entire community, a good representation, I think, from the entire community.
And Beth, how did you get involved in this effort?
Miss Elliott. she called
Beth
me.
Is gifted, and she works every day with our Hispanic community. And she's an amazing woman, and I think she was the right person to moderate the group.
So at the People's Health Clinic, you're kind of on the front lines of a lot of what's happening in regards to the immigration debate. A lot of people say undocumented immigrants are a tax on our health care system because they go to the emergency room. That's one of the criticisms that are out there. You provide health services for free to the community. Can you tell us what you're seeing?
Sure, I'd love to. So at the clinic, our mission is simple. We provide quality health care for the uninsured of Selma and Wasatch County. And with that being said, the only thing that People's Health Clinic ever asks is, do you have insurance and where do you live? So I, on a personal level, as many Latino members of our patient community come in, we never ask that question. I will let you know that I know some of our patients did not show up yesterday for appointments, and I would assume that that might have something to do with what's going on in the community. And we'd like to assure them that People's Health Clinic is a very safe place, and we have resources where we can refer all of our patients if they have questions about any concerns or issues regarding immigration. We can refer them. We don't have those answers. It's not our mission. But we do know where to send them.
And Sally, you were talking about the Bright Futures program in the Park City schools and some things you're hearing through those channels.
Well, I think many of the young people in our schools are very, very frightened. One of the rumors I heard was that a father of one of the Bright Future students was arrested. So this is touching us very close to home. It's touching us very, very close to the young children we've tried to nurture and help and develop. I don't know whether you know much about this program or not, but private citizens in Park City have spent thousands and thousands of dollars making it possible for these children to have extra opportunities. Vail Resorts has provided full ski gear, clothing, meals, lessons. The community has just poured out its heart to help be sure that these young people are given every single chance they can possibly have. And when we see them hurting and fearful, it makes us all fearful.
And you have both been in the community for a long time.
30 years here.
What is the contribution of this community to our whole economy?
Well, we were white bread 30 years ago when I moved to Park City, and they have just added many layers of interest and diversity and cultural things that we never had before.
Right, and I sincerely believe that without our Latino partners in the community, a lot of our restaurants don't open the doors, and those that do don't provide the service that we've become very accustomed to receiving. So I think it would impact us greatly not to have these community partners.
I think some people's eyes were open last Thursday, was it, with a day without immigrants, and there were some restaurants that were closed.
Yeah. Thanks to for that reason. Thank you, Bill White, for supporting that. I think that was a nice look into what could be our future.
So, Sally, what do you hope will come out of this meeting Thursday night?
I hope that we will sit in the room and look at each other and understand the many different kinds of viewpoints that we face. You know, the federal law enforcement has its point of view. Our local law enforcement has its point of view. Holy Cross Ministries has a very important role to play in the community. Beth, through delivering health service to the uninsured, has a different viewpoint. If we can all just come together very politely and very sincerely to try to understand the viewpoints of other people, I think we'll be a much richer community. And let me emphasize again, the information that I sent out said this is not a protest. This is not a place to come and air your grievances. This is not a place to come and be angry and say ugly things. This is a place to come and understand and learn.
And if someone wants to help, where should they go? What should they do?
Well, I thought I might bring some clipboards. And as the meeting goes along, I thought I'd bring some clipboards and some pencils, and we can just have a follow-up to this meeting with several different directions that people might decide that they want to go.
Have y'all had any conversations with either Park City City Council, Summit County Council about their involvement with this meeting Thursday night?
No, they're not involved at all. This is a very private meeting. They may show up as private citizens, but I just started this myself. This has nothing to do with the city or county.
And I'm acting as a private citizen, and I'm simply moderating the event.
Got it. Okay. Thank you very much, Sally Elliott and Beth Armstrong. Let's remind everybody once again where and when.
6 o'clock, St. Luke's, yes. At the Blue Roof, near Parley's Park Elementary, just off 224.
Thursday night. Any idea how long it's going to go?
Oh, gosh. Can you run a meeting like this in an hour?
I'm hoping that we're done in two.
2 hours?
Yeah, I think.
Oh, I'll be sound asleep.
Okay. No, we want everyone to have a voice, so it'll go until everyone has gotten up and asked their questions.
Thank you very much.